always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
All right, here's a bold statement,
okay,
that somebody may not agree with, but we're going to try to make the case for it here. How about this?
Cubs win the World Series?
Yeah, right, Steph. Yeah.
That's a dream.
You've had your one for this century, okay? All right, how about this? Want better citizens?
Mm-hmm.
Then support school choice.
Ooh.
Is it that simple?
Interesting.
All right, maybe a part.
Can we back it up?
Well, we're about to find out. All right, 7:06 right now. I'm Mike Ferguson. That's Gabe Pfeiffer right there, and Stel Ponticus and La La Land right over here as well. All right, now joined by Daryl Jones, our friends at the Herzog Foundation. And Daryl, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at Reliant, as I tend to do quite a bit. And there's the article on there that I want to talk to you about here. And it makes the claim, and let me just read the headline here. Private and parochial schools produce better citizens than public schools. New research finds, and Jillian wrote this one. That's a pretty big claim to say there. Now, first of all, we're talking about better citizens. Are we just talking about better educated and know how to read, write, and do arithmetic? Are we talking about better engaged and better involved civically?
No, we are talking about better and more active citizens. That's what we're talking about. Let me throw a shout out to Jillian. Two nights ago, the Evangelical Press Association named her the upcoming Journalist of the Year.
Oh.
That's big time for Jillian. So she's terrific, and the whole staff at readlion.com is fantastic. Yeah, so this whole article was produced by a study found by the Education Psychology Review, not really known for being a conservative group, the Education Psychology Review, that are simply looking at the statistics. If you're looking for students who are politically tolerant of other people's views, who are participants in politics, who engage to some level, some kind of activity politically, regarding civil knowledge and skills, they understand the issues of the day, they understand self-government, remaining under control, and regarding volunteerism and social capital, where they're actually engaging in their community, not simply for political purpose, but for community engagement, the statistics show that private and parochial schools produce better citizens than public schools. So that's, an objective study from the Educational Psychology Review who's saying, hey, look, here's what we're finding. At a time when 87% of American eighth graders aren't proficient in history and 78% are not proficient in civics, the statistics are showing that those students in private and specifically Christian schools produce better citizens than public schools.
Good morning, Daryl. Gabe Pfeiffer here. So I'm going to play devil's advocate here and bring up one of the contrary talking points here, where they say, well, parochial and private schools are a self-selected group. So they get the pick of the litter of the best students. So obviously they're going to come out with the best outcomes. It's an apples to orange comparison with public schools. What do you say to that?
You know, it's really not fair. And to be honest with you, school choice states, look at Florida for crying out loud. School choice states are making options, no matter the income of the family, for parents to have options, which is why we have been so strongly supportive of parental choice and school choice, giving options for other students. I mean, you know, we had an article. To answer your question, Gabe, we had an article that was talking about how Catholic school enrollment in the state of Florida is up, and not simply Catholic school enrollment, but It has raised the tide for all schools in Florida. School choice is bringing about a competition among schools to do better, to engage their students. And frankly, in the state of Florida, where there is school choice, universal school choice specifically, attendance, enrollment in school is up across the board. In Catholic schools, in Protestant schools, in public schools, school choice is helping everybody. And so, you know, the idea that, well, only the rich kids are going to Christian schools, as you said, it's self-selective. You know, the fact is, we're doing everything that we can to support those families and those states that are crying out for additional options for their kids.
You know, and one of the things that, and I've got another question on this here in a second, Daryl, but one of the things that that really kind of dawned on me when I'm reading this article, and that is that sometimes in media, you have to make the case for why a story matters to you. And if somebody, you know, is in their 50s, their 60s, their 70s, even their late 40s, you're like, you know what? My kids are about out of school. I don't have a dog in the fight anymore. That's all politics and policy. What this is showing here is that, no, you do have a stake in this, that the school choice isn't just about where funding goes for parents with children in K through 12 schools. This really does have a direct impact on pretty much everything else in our communities.
Well, it's really true. I mean, Horace Mann, you know, one of the, considered the founder of, you know, the father of public education, the case that he was making for why it needed to be become a public institution across the country was for the purpose of better citizens, citizens who were capable of self-governing and who were more engaged and more involved and more in the know. And, you know, public education, you know, is doing the best that they possibly can. But, you know, the latest statistics are saying that the parochial schools, Christian schools, Catholic schools, private schools are doing a better job.
Daryl, we've also had kind of research to the contrary, I guess, about our results coming out of public schools, that showing that 87% of America's eighth graders aren't proficient in history, and 78% are not so in civics. So, you know, we've got the positive results from our parochial and private schools, and we got really, really negative results coming out of our public schools. Do you think there's a direct tie to the direction of our public schools in terms of those outcomes as to the way our children are being taught these days?
You know, I think there's just a fundamental breakdown in public education. I mean, you know, let's find an area, name an area where public education is thriving and doing an exceptional job. It's an archaic system that is broken, and that's why you're seeing parents and you know, screaming to their state legislatures, do something, make a change here. And certainly you're finding red states that are more open to making change and listening to their constituents than blue states. It's interesting to see how, you know, blue states are not you know, not looking at what is the product of public education and what's it doing to the inner city children that are growing up. But I think you're talking about just a fundamental flaw that, you know, Christian schools and private schools have been able to make some correction. And with that correction, children are coming to school. I mean, one of the biggest problems that public educators are talking about is the lack of attendance. Kids are just not coming back to school. And certainly that all affects, you know, as a direct result of their funding. Well, how do we get kids back to school? Interestingly, Christian schools, private schools are figuring that out to the degree that, you know, the students in private schools are performing better than their peers in public education.
All right. The article is called Private and Parochial Schools Produce Better Citizens Than Public Schools. New research finds. You can find it at readlion.com. And we're visiting with Daryl Jones from the Herzog Foundation. Daryl, just got a couple minutes left here. But one of the things that I noticed, and first of all, let me go back to a quote that's been attributed to a bunch of people. I can't actually determine where it came from, but it goes along the lines of he who controls the schools controls the next generation. That's been associated with Lenin. It's been associated with others. And I don't exactly know where it came from, but it's been kind of a common theme in a lot of anti, you know, a lot of anti-conservative things, anti-faith things. And when you're reading this article, when I'm reading this article here, I happen to notice that the new study and the research doesn't say that private and parochial schools produce more conservative citizens. Didn't address the worldview. It just looked at the engagement and productivity and whether or not you're part of the glue that holds a family and community together. Comment on that, if you would.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, you can find religious schools across the political spectrum. I mean, I can name schools on either end, right? I mean, people are people. But when you're talking about, you know, the education of the child, their ability to read, and understand and pursue contrary ideas, when you're talking about the ability to do mathematics, when you're talking about their understanding of history, their understanding of civil engagement, private schools are doing a better job, and that's just on the record. I mean, that's just on the record. And the more children that have opportunity for private and Christian education are doing better. And interestingly, it didn't say, you know, the article doesn't talk about, the research didn't say that there was a discrimination even based on whether these were, you know, Christian schools in the inner city or whether they were Christian schools in outlying agricultural communities. It just says across the board, Christian education is producing a product that is educating children more in the areas of reading, mathematics. I mean, that's not what this study specifically is talking about, history and civic engagement. But Christian schools are doing it. And the idea that, you know, but to allow more parents to have options is going to be the end all of public education. The statistics say that's just not true.
All right, Daryl Jones from the Herzog Foundation. ReadLion.com is where you're going to find that story and many more. I mean, it's updated constantly through the day. I recommend subscribing to the newsletter. I get that myself here. But Daryl, people want to be in touch because you all are the one of the go-to places for the Most Scholars program on the Missouri side of the listing area. People want to get in touch with you. The way to do it is what?
Absolutely. HerzogFoundation.com. You can find everything about the Herzog Foundation and ReadLion.com. We're writing between, our writers are writing between 10 and 15 articles every single day about what's going on in education across the country, everything from home education to Christian education to public education. ReadLion.com.
All right. Thanks, Daryl. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Daryl.
Okay. Have a great week.
All right, 314-912-1019. Have you ever noticed that somebody just carries themselves with a lot of confidence? People tend to not question them.
Oh, yeah.
That could be why a dude was able to steal a couple cars in Dutchtown.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's a little blurb I saw on Channel 4's news, and I went, wait a minute, how did he get away with that? And then I got to thinking, it's kind of the way we're all sort of
programmed.
Conditioned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here, I'll tell you what's going on right around 7:23 here on 101.9 94.1 Newstalk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I found this story on Channel 4's website. And, you know, it's another car theft in, you know, the South City area, Dutchtown area. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And I generally scroll past those because, unfortunately, in St. Louis, car thefts are just a...
It happens too often.
Yeah, it's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like smash and grabs. It's just a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, there was a video on it. And I'm like, okay, I'll click on that. And what it turns out is that it's a dude in a tow truck. And he's just driving up and pulling up and grabbing an old car and driving off with it.
Hooking him up.
And doing it in the middle of the day.
Brazen right in the middle. Right mm-hmm. in the broad daylight.
That's amazing.
And he's gotten two of the cars already.
Okay.
And it kind of dawned on me. I'm like, well, wait a minute. How does this happen?
It seems kind of crazy. It seems like one of those movie script type of things, right?
Yeah, but I think I've got one of the reasons why. I think I figured out one of the reasons why. 314-912-1019. I'll give you my thoughts on this. I would love to know what you think. By the way, just ahead, we've seen all the protests and the violence that's happening on college campuses, all against Israel. I mean, this is anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, violence. And you may wonder, where is that coming from? We know how left-wing the colleges and universities are, but at 7:35, we're going to find out, get more details on the fact that it might be a pro-Muslim activist group that's infiltrating how your school frames its curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting, and if it's true, can be kind of scary. We'll have that conversation at 7:35. It's 7:25 right now. Okay, so back to this thing in Dutchtown. So I'm thinking about this, and it kind of dawned on me. Maybe this is the communications guy in me. I don't know. But if you walk into a place like you own it, mm-hmm. you've got that confidence.
Oh, yeah.
People generally don't question you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of our human condition, at least in the Western world.
Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, he's acting like he's supposed to be here, so I guess he's supposed to be here.
And you couple that with a lot of people who do not want to have a confrontation,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a recipe. I'm thinking this is actually kind of brilliant from a thieves' perspective, from a criminal perspective.
Yeah.
It's a blue tow truck. It's one of those flatbed tow trucks, you know, where the thing tilts down and they pull the car up on it. So it's not the little thing that lifts it up, just under it drags the car.
Right.
And so it's a blue tow truck that says C&J Towing or C&J Transport, I think it's called. And there's a video of it on Channel 4's website. And the guy just pulls up. He's in his thing with a patch with his name on it. And he just backs right up to a car, pulls it up, and drives off. So he's got two of these. You know, police reports were filed. And he was doing another one. And the woman came out and confronted him, said, I'm calling the cops. And that's when he decided to hightail it out of there.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned that it was done during the day. I think the other aspect is he may have been figuring not many folks are home in the middle of the day. So maybe I can get away with this.
Yeah, I mean, their car's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just kind of wondering, because I'm thinking, if a tow truck just pulled up and starts pulling a car off my street, I don't know that I would think twice about it.
No.
You know, it's like, well, you know, somebody's getting their car repaired, or boy, man, the neighbors didn't make their payment. Man, that's embarrassing for those of us in Richmond Heights. But I don't know that I would think twice of it.
Well, because
you just kind of assume that they're supposed to be there.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, you would imagine that somebody who's sunk enough money into a business venture to get a branded, specialized vehicle to do this wouldn't risk, you know, a theft charge. You know what I mean? They obviously have something to lose. They've got a pretty expensive vehicle, right?
Unless that vehicle was also stolen.
Oh, yeah, unless that vehicle was stolen.
Probably not, though.
So a couple interesting comments here that have come in on Rumble, at least. Ed says, most people are now used to seeing the repo man, so it looks normal to be stealing a vehicle with a flatbed tow truck.
Mm.
I mean, there's some videos that I see on the, what do you call them, the reels, the Facebook reels.
Yeah.
It's this dude who drives one of the other type of tow truck, but he's a repo dude.
Yeah.
And he basically, the videos are how fast he can get in out on something. And that guy's got some skills.
Yes, they're very quick. Well, and then there's also just the fact that if you're, you know, let's say you had some problem with your vehicle, you call AAA and say, hey, take my vehicle up to the dealership or my favorite mechanic or whatever, you pull it right out of my driveway.
I have had that with a couple vehicles over the years.
Same.
You know, something happens, I call AAA, they tow it over to where, I'm not going to tell you which one because they have to pay for that exposure. But, you know, and that's what happens. So it is kind of normal. So, you know, you're thinking, broad daylight, how's this happen? And that's kind of how the news thing is framed. It's like in broad daylight, nothing looked unusual.
Right. It's nothing not out of the ordinary.
Yeah. Nothing looked abnormal about this. And it just kind of, that's why I was thinking, I'm like, you could do a whole lot just by walking in and acting like you own the place and you know what you're doing. You're showing that confidence. You can actually get away with a lot of stuff.
Well, it's kind of the definition of a con man, right? You know, the con and con man comes from confidence. you know, if you instill confidence in your victim in your, or in the people around you that you are who you say you are, you're doing what you're supposed to do, and there's nothing amiss, then you can get away with a whole lot of stuff. So the confidence comes from the uniform, the vehicle, yeah, and the fact that he's doing it in daylight.
Right.
If he's pulling up to driveways at 3 a.m., something's out of the ordinary, something's right. wrong. Hey, what's this noise I'm hearing in the front yard? All kinds of stuff. If he's just a dude walking down the sidewalk checking doors at 3 a.m., oh my gosh, what's going on? Even at the middle of the day, if you're going on checking doors, just walking around in your street clothes. But the confidence comes from the uniform stuff.
Right.
We respect uniforms, generally speaking, in American society.
Yeah, he wasn't the cartoon bad guy who's got the mask over the eyes,
yeah, like
wearing the fedora and the black stuff, and you know, sneaking around looking over their shoulder with the sound effects going. Whim, whim, whim. You know, it's like a dude's like, I got papers here that say come pick up this car. I don't know what they're doing with it.
And right.
Well, I don't know. It could be going to a chop shop. Could be going to Mexico. Who knows where it's going to be going.
That's pretty wild.
It is. I thought that was just crazy.
Yeah.
Because now what are you going to do? You're going to call a cop every time that a tow truck comes to your neighborhood?
Your neighborhood. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're probably not going to get a response from the St. Louis police anyway.
Because
they're
sure.
like, yeah, we got somebody scheduled to be on staff next Tuesday. Can you tell the thief to wait there for a little bit?
We don't
have any cops. We didn't hire anybody. But yeah, I mean, that's a combination. I'm thinking, don't think that criminals and thieves, and they're not dumb.
No.
A lot of them are not. Some of them are dumb. But a lot of them are not dumb. This guy's not dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
One of the things that always bothered me about thieves, especially the particularly smart ones, is that it's like, if you just applied that to something, you know, legitimate.
Productive
and legitimate. It's like, you know, there are guys who are stealing copper and pulling things out, and the guys who can come up to your car and pull out your catalytic converter in 4 seconds.
Happens to my daughter.
It's like, you could be a mechanic and make all kinds of money. There are mechanics searching the world for people that are, you know, the guys who own these shops. And they're like, I can't get a mechanic to come here and stay here. So just...
I heard a guy once who like does this, you know, works with like, you know, the youth in the urban core of these different cities. He's given one of those presentations.
Yep.
And I've been to a whole bunch of those. And some of them are just hype men. But some of them are really legit and they do a great job. And this guy made a point to what you're saying, Gabe.
Yeah.
Is that he said, I'm telling these guys, you've got the skills, change your product.
Yes, that's it.
He said, and they don't think of it as the skills.
Right, exactly. You know? Hey, you're a drug dealer. You're a great salesman.
Right.
you're good with money. Your weights and measures calculations are on point. I'm sure there's a legitimate way to apply all of these skills, and you won't risk death.
Yes.
Your Ziploc bags are clean.
Your Ziploc bags are clean, man.
I would prefer that person not be a pharmacist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's somewhere else they can do.
Yeah, there's somewhere else you can do.
All right. We know about indoctrination in schools, just on the left overall, but is there a pro-Muslim infiltration of what your kids are being taught? And is that part of the reason we're seeing all of the craziness on some of these college campuses right now and anti-Semitism on some of the college campuses? This may shock you. Let's talk about it at 7:35.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
He who controls the schools controls the next generation. We've talked about that a little bit earlier today. So who's writing and operating the levers of control in the curriculum of your K-12 education? And could that have something to do with what we're seeing on the university campuses today, the anti-Semitism? Literally, we have seen people stand in front of Jewish people saying, you can't go in here because you're Jewish.
Yeah. Shame on you for existing.
So where does that come from? That comes from somewhere. Could that be baked into the secret sauce of the left's control of the K-12 schools?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, maybe not.
You know, I mentioned a little earlier, Mike, that I saw some photos yesterday from the University of Vienna in Europe. And
44, I think. No, it's actually earlier.
It was 1933.
Yeah. 33,
believe
that's
it or
right.
not.
That's
yeah.
right.
And they were lined up in front of the doors, keeping the Jewish kids out of the buildings.
That wasn't under the Nazis. That was the Weimar Republic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've got a situation of, if history is if we're in danger of history repeating itself, how on earth did we get there and how do we have the mushy brains that would go along with it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go back to their younger years in school. We might find the answer. It is 7:39 right now. I'm Mike. Got Gabe here, got Stell here. Now joined by Carolyn Moore from Parents Defending Education. Carolyn, and that's a pretty, I guess, hyper, but some would say a hyperbolic way to set up the discussion. But there's some new reporting and some new research that says there might be a pro-Muslim entity that sort of infiltrated how some of this curriculum is being framed to our young people. Sounds an awful lot like a big conspiracy theory, but what was actually found?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we've kind of found all over the country, there are states that are baking things into the curriculum that talk about, you know, a different type of history, not necessarily, you know, American history, but the way that the curriculum is taught, it's taught as though like oppressor versus oppressed, which I'm sure you guys have heard of. Our most recent finding is in Perth Amboy High School in New Jersey. And we found that there are these nonprofit entities that surround most schools, and somehow they've gotten their way into curriculum. My personal opinion is because I don't think that there's curriculum being pushed from the conservative side. I think that there's really just these leftist groups seem to be pushing curriculum on school districts, and they say, oh, well, we don't have any other option. Might as well. How bad could it be? But what we found is that this group is actually, the psychology teacher is actually the founder of the group. It's called Teaching While Muslim. And the program focuses on teaching students implicit bias and accusing Israel of genocide, which is absolutely insane that that is being taught in public schools in the United States. History can't be one-sided. I think that, you know, you need to look at the entire situation. It was, you know, different things happened at different periods in time. And yes, I mean, there have been ongoing wars in the Middle East, and especially Israel and Palestine. Everybody knows that that's controversial. Posing the entire question as, you know, it's implicit bias and saying that Israel is responsible for genocide is just ludicrous. It's just not true.
And according to a National Review article, which is called Islamic Education Consulting Group Brainwashing Public School Students with Anti-Israel Propaganda, you can find that at nationalreview.com, that Teaching While Muslim is the organization that Carolyn's just mentioning. It's referred to an organization working to, and it's using quotes, so this is from Teaching While Muslim, actively includes social justice, anti-racist, anti-Islamophobic curricula and educators in our schools. And so that's the organization Carolyn is referring to.
Good morning, Carolyn. Gabe Pfeiffer here. And you mentioned the idea that maybe these teachers, they, because they don't have an alternative, or maybe partially, you know, they can use that as an excuse because they don't have an alternative curriculum, that they can just adopt these various new curriculums that show up. But I always think back to my school days, and I learned about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in a pretty even-handed way. What happens to the old curriculum? Why do they always have to change it over time?
That's a great question. They don't have to. I think that, you know, these school districts are kind of, I don't know if it's, you know, the administrators are pushing for these crazy curriculums, or if it's teachers. In this case, it happens to be, you know, the teacher is the founder of this organization. One of the teachers is the founder of this organization. So obviously, you know, you would assume in staff meetings, kind of like in their ear, saying like, oh, well, we could teach history this way and, you know, talk about social justice as opposed to, I don't know, truth and fact. And I'm not saying that they're being taken for a ride. I definitely agree with you. I went to public school my entire life, and I think that I had a very fair assessment of what was going on in the Middle East. We didn't learn anything like this. But it seems like activists have kind of hijacked either the school boards, or they've kind of captured superintendents in school districts and kind of talked them into, no, like you need to make up for, you know, your white past or your colonizational past and teach things from the oppressor versus oppressed view. And I'm only saying that because that seems to be what's popping up across the country. This particular Teaching While Muslim group While they focus on the implicit bias, they have resources for teachers, activists. They have lesson plans specifically on colonization. And what it is it's reteaching, you know, the things that we taught, we learned growing up. So it's that, you know, the Europeans came over and took over the United States, or, you know, took over North America, and not showing, you know, both sides of the historical story. And I think it's in an effort to kind of, I don't know, somehow right some, you know, irrational wrong or something like that. That's the only thing that I can really understand for this. But like this organization, they, like I said, they have resources for teachers, activists, how to stage walkouts, how to do boycotts. If you're a teacher and you're teaching the social justice way, or teaching the genocide of Palestinians, if you run into issues with your administrators, you're supposed to call your union rep. I mean, it gives you those kind of resources, as well as the lesson plans that are completely biased in what's being taught. And so it's kind of like an all-encompassing, you know, it's curriculum, but it's all-encompassing. It even has like social media resources, what you should be posting on social media so that your kids are, the kids in the class are really understanding what's going on. It's a hijacking of the system, definitely.
Good morning, Carolyn Stelpontik is here. So are the parents in these various school districts pushing back and saying, we don't want this stuff in the classroom?
Yes, I think that they're just realizing that this is going on. We found out this material through open records requests. And so our goal is to get this information out. I think a lot of parents, you know, they don't necessarily know what their kids are learning in class, especially this is the high school. And I think kids are kind of mum's the word. You know, if it's not an issue, they're not going to bring it up. And so we hope by publicizing this, even more parents will get involved and push back, go to school board meetings, talk to principals, and really push back on this curriculum, because there's no reason that this should exist in public schools.
We're visiting with Carolyn Moore from Parents Defending Education. We're going to give out the contact information for your all's group, because I know you've got a lot of resources available as well. But it's not a big leap to connect everything you just described with the nonsense and even the violence that we're seeing on these college university campuses popping up over the past, just about the past week or so as well. I mean, this seems like the logical end of the pipeline that's beginning in the K-12 public schools, because you found this in a few schools, but my guess is that it's probably more widespread than what people realize.
Absolutely. I mean, and I know when we first opened up the conversation, talked about being maybe conspiratorial or something like that. Initially, I think people probably think that, but no, this is going on in red states and blue states, in urban areas and suburban areas, and I think people just aren't aware of it, that it's kind of, it's similar to like the DEI teaching. You know, it used to maybe be in one subject, but now it's in math and science and history, and it's all interwoven. And so it's very similar to what's going on here. And I think what is, you know, people are picking up on is like what's happening in college, but you wonder, gosh, are these, you know, is it just one isolated case of, you know, these college students, they're trying to rebel? But no, like what you said is these kids have been taught that this is, you know, how you look at an issue like this. You can look at it through the lens of oppressor and oppressed, and you automatically know that, you know, supposedly Israel is at fault, which is not the case. But if they're taught that from an early age, and then they become adults, then what do we expect them to think? Of course, they think that that's correct, because they learned it in school.
Let's let everybody know where they can find the resources that you all have to offer. And of course, following your blog is one of the areas that I find really helpful as well. So how do they get in touch?
Yeah, we have some great resources on our website, defendinged.org. And you can follow into all of our social media on there. And we have great toolkits for parents, the questions that you should be asking when you are meeting with principals and teachers and at school boards to try to hold the school district accountable, and also increase transparency for all parents and students in the district.
All right. Carolyn Moore from Parents Defending Education. Good chat with you again, Carolyn. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you.
314-912-1019. We know there's a lot of bias, but this is particularly insidious.
Yeah, there are so many fronts that need to be confronted in terms of the bad policy, the bad curriculum that are moving through our K-12 education. So I'm so glad that there are organizations like this out there that are keeping an eye on these guys.
Absolutely. All right, just ahead here, right around 7:52 or so, about 2.5 minutes or so, let's find out whether or not all of us are a-holes.
Yes. There's a question on the table about that. And I think a lot of people are going to be able to identify with this issue.
And for once, evidence indicates I am not the a-hole.
Yeah.
Earlier today. We'll tell you why just ahead on 101.9 941 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It's just such a good song.
It is.
ZZ Top.
I really love it.
All right.
And it's the opposite of us, sharp dressed.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not today. Not today.
You know, you've got the News Talk sweatshirt on, mm-hmm. which is always fashionable. I've got my anti-Che
which is
t-shirt on.
Always a great statement to make.
That's right.
Stale, you're kind of dressed, you know.
Your shirt has a collar, so that's more than we can say.
That's a whole other level.
Yeah.
Classic. Okay, so you found one of these. Is this off Reddit?
Yeah, this is off the Reddit. Okay. Am I the a-hole? Reddit stories, I think, are just prolific at this point. They're everywhere.
Let me set this up with, I'm glad you found that one.
Yeah.
Because this morning I come in, of course, I've been trying to trim down a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know,
you've been successful, sir.
Over 15 pounds over mm-hmm. the last couple of months.
All right.
So I'm very happy with that. I haven't done anything special other than eat stuff that's healthy, not eat stuff that's not healthy,
yes.
and work out more.
Yeah.
That's literally all I do.
That's really all it takes.
So because we've got a bunch of snacks available to us around the station here.
All the time.
Lots of candy.
Vending machines down the hall.
I'm bringing in this thing of just fruit, you know, celery sticks and carrots and cucumbers and stuff like that. And I came this morning, and usually when I'd come in with some snacks, I'm like, hey, guys, you want something? You're like, oh, yeah, sure, I have one. But I bring in the fresh veggies,
yes.
and you guys are like, no, thanks. I'm like, hey, anybody want some vegetables? And Stell goes, you got any dip?
Hey. Did you bring some spinach dip?
So, no, that defeats the purpose of what I'm trying to do.
Well, being Greek, that's standard.
Yeah,
if you have something, sauce, you're supposed to be able to dip it into something. Yeah.
Tzatziki sauce.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but that would at least prove that in this case, I'm not the a-hole this time around.
Right, because this is about sharing food. Okay, so this guy writes this story out, and I think you're going to catch the reason why I think a lot of people, especially people in a relationship, especially men, have come across this situation. So this guy was in for a minor. He was going to minor examination at the hospital. He had to not eat for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
His examination was delayed for 4 hours. So it was going on like 32, 34 hours since he had eaten.
Oh.
So he gets home and he's like, I'm tired. I don't want to cook. I'm going to order something. And he asks his girlfriend, you want something? She says, I'd rather cook. And he says, I'm not cooking. I'm not even sharing the cooking duties. I'm going to order something. I know exactly what I want. Do you want anything? And she says, you know what? You go ahead. I'll cook. Now,
I know what's about to happen.
When his food gets there. Now, she's in the meantime, as his food was on the way, she has decided not to cook. She's like, you know what? I'm not hungry.
Okay.
The food gets there. And all of a sudden, she's hungry. Mm-hmm. Can I have some of your food? And I'm just reading the account, but I can see the indignation on his face.
Yes.
Yes. He's like, I ordered exactly what I wanted. This amount of food is the amount of food that I'm going to eat. There is none for you. She's like, no, but you have plenty there. This is my food. If you want food, you cook or you order it yourself. I'm eating this. So he's asking the internet, the Redditors who are reading this, am I the a-hole for refusing to share the food I ordered?
I think there are two answers to this. Are you the a-hole? The answer is a resounding no.
No.
You are not the a-hole.
No.
Every logical part of this says that you tried to order her food. She refused to do it. This is all on her.
Yes.
Now, that's the correct answer.
That is absolutely the true answer.
the smart answer,
especially if you're married.
Yes. If you want to maintain peace in your home, is you suck it up and you give her some food, even though she's wrong and you're right.
Oh, yes.
I'm not sure that's the hill to die on. The really smart answer is to go, I know she's full of crap. I'm going to order something else anyway.
You got it. You got it. That is the playing a 4D chess answer right there. Because and what's funny is I've seen these social media posts, these videos about this guy's like, oh, you know, I asked her if she wanted food. It's like, I asked her if she wanted food. She said no. But, you know, and I ordered from a place she likes. So I got her standard order. Yep. You know her standard order.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
He got her standard order anyway. So when he sat down with his food and she asked to have his food, he just reached down, grabbed another bag, and set it in front of her. And it was awesome. That's playing 4D chess with your relationship issues.
And then she's so, her heart melts because so thoughtful, and she starts smooching all over you. And everybody wins.
Sauce everywhere.
But the bottom line is, he's not the a-hole,
no,
but he didn't think ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So, but now, to be fair, he was hangry. So there's only so much. There's only so much thinking ahead you can do when you're in that condition.
Because that's one of the things. Blue's nut. She's wrong, and I choose violence. No, don't choose violence. You know.
Oh, this is the figurative violence. Yes. It's like, you know what? Not only am I not going to give you any food, I'm not going to help you order
this
either.
This is like you're going to wrap your arm around it and snarl like you're trying to take somebody's trying to take your dog's bone.
Exactly. Don't
I've got utensils
here,
and I know how to use them.
Oh, man. So, no, not the A-hole.
Not the A-hole.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.